Having lots of sugar in your blood can really do a number on your blood vessels. Symptoms start with the small blood vessels first, like those supplying your eyes, your kidneys, or your feet. Meanwhile, larger blood vessels are also being damaged, increasing the risk of heart disease and strokes. But it need not happen with therapy or lifestyle change that reverses diabetes. To keep those sugars down, stand by. Go Healthy for Good starts right now. I'm Dr. Nerida. Welcome to Go Healthy for Good. The longer you have diabetes and the less controlled your blood sugar, the higher the risk for complications. Eventually, those complications may be disabling or even life-threatening, like cardiovascular disease, nerve damage, kidney failure, blindness, skin and bone conditions, hearing impairment, and Alzheimer's. Those things were not on Donald's health plan. Watch this.
I just left Japan and I came to Maryland to work for the DOD as a security assistant. And I noticed one day that I was having some issues with my health. Dry mouth, and I couldn't figure out why I was having dry mouth. Then I noticed one day I felt dizzy, walk up the stairs, and I says, is it maybe something I ate? Or then I'll find my eyes were having problems with seeing, and it got really bad. And what really started concerning me is that I was going to the bathroom too frequent. And some of it was kind of embarrassing. I know I was trying to be healthy. I was drinking more water, drinking more juices, and I eat more fruits. And I thought I was doing the right thing. I wasn't telling my wife what my problem was. So I decided to make an appointment at the Kimbrough Hospital here at Fort Meade. Doc, I'm having these problems, dry mouth, frequent urination. And she says, dry mouth, frequent urination? I'm gonna do some blood work on you. Interesting, within 4 days, she called me back to my office and Mr. Williams, I need you to go back to the lab and do blood again. And so I went to her office, I believe on a Thursday, and to my surprise, she took me into her console, shut the door, and she said, okay, we got all the results back from your physical. There's nothing major wrong from the heart and from the other areas that we assess, but we have a big concern of your lab report. And I says, what, doc? She said, you're not pre. You're not type 1. You're not type 2. You are off the charts. And I says, huh? She says, you have diabetes. I said, diabetes? And I'm mumbling to myself, diabetes? She said, that's right. I recommend that you go on metformin, insulin. I said, well, doc, it's my fault. I'm just telling her, it's my fault. She said, don't feel bad. Over 79 million people have diabetes. I said, doc, but it's my fault. I believe if I reverse my diet, I can reverse the diabetes. And doc says, look, Mr. Williams, if you don't go on this insulin, it can affect your pancreas, it can affect your heart, you can go into a stroke, cardiac arrest. And I said to her, doc, I understand what you're saying, but I believe if I change my diet, then my diabetes will go away.
I wonder if his doctor believed him. Stay with us to find out. Also on today's show, we have a fantastic gluten-free breakfast, a workout with Sean, and some great experts. But first, the news. In the headlines today, new plant compounds may hold the answer for diabetes, spinal cord stimulation for pain, and diabetics have no beef with beans. A flowering plant extract has been found that stimulates the insulin-making cells in the pancreas to regrow and helps bring down sugar levels in the blood. In the first year of life, beta cells in the pancreas multiply at the fastest rate, and this new compound triggers the same response. Called harmine, it comes from a plant growing in the Middle East and South America, where it's used as a tea or smoked because it is hallucinogenic. That's the downside, which will need to be overcome before it can come to market. Until then, perhaps a new onion bulb extract could help. According to a new study in diabetic rats, they were given an onion extract with their metformin and had significant lowering of blood sugars and cholesterol. The next stage is to see if it achieves the same result in humans. So while you're waiting, don't stop eating your onions. Spinal cord stimulation, or SCS, appears to be effective in managing painful diabetic peripheral neuropathy. 60% of the 22 patients randomized to SCS in the small trial were very much improved, compared with only 7% of those receiving standard care. Pain was improved in over half, and sleep improved in one-third, compared with none in the standard care group. It should be noted, however, that one patient died as a complication of the SCS, so it's not without its risks. Beans improve the metabolic health of those with diabetes, according to a recent study published in the European Journal of Clinical Nutrition. These are the findings of a small study that randomized one group of patients to eat no legumes, while another group replaced two servings of red meat with legumes on 3 days of each week. Those eating legumes had lower glucose, insulin, blood fats, and LDL, or bad cholesterol. Since beans are a lot cheaper than red meat, and they come with this great health benefit, consider replacing meat with beans on your plate today. After all, what have you got to lose? I'm Dr. Nerida McKibben, and that's today's health news. The first part of today's show was recorded in San Diego at the American College of Lifestyle Medicine, where we met with Dr. Phil Tuso. Dr. Tuso is the physician leader for Kaiser Permanente and specializes in the care of kidney disease. So I asked him why kidneys are particularly affected by diabetes.
Well, the kidney's a very important organ for what it does to help us to thrive, but it's a very vascular organ too. And we know that diabetes affects the lining of the blood vessels and the walls of the blood vessels. So anywhere there's a lot of vasculature, there's going to be injury from diabetes. And since the kidney is a very vascular organ, it's a prime target for the effects that diabetes has on vascular plumbing system of our body.
Now, what's the treatment for kidney disease with diabetes?
So prevention is the key right now, and we're trying to go as much upstream as we can. So we know that the number one cause of kidney disease is diabetes, right? And so if you have diabetes, we want to control your diabetes, which is to keep your blood sugar levels within normal and your blood pressure normal, and that you are eating healthy and living actively. But our new focus now is in pre-diabetes, because we can identify pre-diabetes by blood tests. And we know if we can treat pre-diabetics with lifestyle management, that we can actually prevent diabetes, which actually will prevent kidney disease.
So if someone doesn't follow that advice and they don't control their sugars, they're not careful about their diet, they don't do the physical activity, what are they facing long-term for their kidneys?
Well, long-term they're facing dialysis, which is a very sad disease, one because it's preventable in most cases, and two, and I don't know if you've ever been to a dialysis center, but I round on a dialysis center weekly, and there's so many sad stories, mainly because, you know, they come to dialysis and they're on dialysis 3 times a week, and they have fistulas that are built into their arm that for women are not so appealing when they're wearing their clothes and things too. And some people, if they do not get a fistula, have a catheter in their neck that goes into their heart and can increase their risk for infection. So if you don't take care of your kidneys and you don't take care of your diabetes, then you could develop renal failure and be in dialysis 3 times a week till the rest of your life, or until you can get a kidney transplant.
How do you assess renal damage? How would a diabetic, they should be going to their doctor, they should be getting follow-up for their renal disease, shouldn't they? What's the doctor going to measure there?
So most of the primary care doctors are very aware of what needs to be done to save the kidneys in people with diabetes. So the doctor will measure blood tests, which include a blood creatinine level and a blood urea nitrogen level. And by that, they can tell what stage kidney they are. And there's 5 stages of kidney disease. And then based on that, they may need more intensive management. And usually they're referred to a nephrologist when they're stage 4 or stage 5, which means their kidney function is under 30%. So the primary care doctors will monitor that, and they also monitor the urine for protein. And if they have evidence of protein, they will place them on medications to help reduce the pressure inside the kidney called ACE inhibitors or ARBs, angiotensin receptor blockers. And so common is to control the diabetes, control their blood pressure, and if they have proteinuria or protein in their urine, to put them on medications that'll help reduce proteinuria and save the kidneys.
Any chance of reversing renal disease if you have it as a diabetic?
Well, we believe that the key is keeping the vascular tone healthy, right? And we're promoting now saving the endothelial cells, which are the cells that line the vascular supply of our body that also goes to the kidneys. And there is evidence now that by preventing endothelial cell injury, that we can prevent further damage to the blood vessel wall, which will ultimately prevent further damage to the kidney and other organs and decrease the risk of early deaths from coronary artery disease, stroke, or even kidney failure.
So we're talking prevention rather than any chance of reversal. Once we're down that track,
it's very hard to reverse kidney disease once you've developed renal failure. Because when you go on dialysis, means you have less than 15% of your kidney function, which means 85% of your kidney is scarred. And usually what happens when something is injured, the cells can either decide to go to scar tissue or to healing. And once you go to scar tissue, you can't get that back. It's kind of like when you have a heart attack, you injure your heart muscle and cause irreversible damage to that heart tissue. So the goal is to go upstream and prevent the heart attack. I think we can all relate to that. And we want to think of the kidney as the same thing. We want to go upstream and prevent the damage from getting to 15% where they need to go on dialysis. Certainly we can do a kidney transplant and they can regain kidney function, but they're going to need a whole new healthy kidney being transplanted in their body to do that.
Dialysis or a new kidney? Prevention is definitely a better option. Don't go away, we're back with an eye specialist after the break, but first, this.
I love the red candy.
Did you know red dye causes diarrhea, headaches, and even cancer?
What? Well, no more red dye for me, but that's not a problem because I love the blue ones as well.
Well, I hate to tell you, that causes hyperactivity and in children, ADHD.
What are you talking about? So what is there that I can eat that's pleasurable?
There are lots of great tasting foods that are even good for you.
And how do you know the difference?
The closer to nature, the better.
So these candies that are highly refined are probably dubious?
Well, did you ever see candy fall off a tree?
No, I can't say I have.
And likewise, did you ever see anyone dig Burger Coke and fries out of the garden?
No, you certainly don't.
Well, you remember the saying, if God made it,
eat it.
If man made it,
read it.
And if you can't read it, don't eat it. So if it's food as grown, then it's good for you.
So all the binding, grinding, and refining and adding all those chemical colorings and additives are not very good for you?
Terrible chemistry. Instead, have red strawberries, red raspberries, red plums, and red apples. Doctor's orders. We're back, and breakfast is the most important meal of the day. Phil's here, and we're going to make a wonderful breakfast for you today.
And I'm very excited because I'm looking at these ingredients, and this looks amazing.
Yeah.
Just even before it's put together.
It does. It's so colorful, isn't it? Well, tell us what's in it.
Sure. We're going to start with a tablespoon of chopped dates, a cup of water, a cup of quinoa, half a cup of raw cashews, a quarter teaspoon of sea salt, a teaspoon of vanilla, and an additional cup of water, and then some various seeds, which I'm sure you're going to be telling us all about later.
Absolutely. So what I've done is I've started those dates pieces to just soften in there, in the water already. So that's the first cup of water in there. And with that, we're going to put in our cashews and then our quinoa. Now, quinoa needs to be, pass that over for me, Phil, and I'll just...
Now, this isn't just quinoa.
This is quinoa that's in three colors. You can get quinoa as black, white, or red. And so this is what they call tricolor. It's a combination of all of them. Now, if you use white alone, you get very white waffles. And if you want them to look brown and yummy, you can cheat and just color added. Use the combination. If you use black, they come out really dark, and I've done that before.
But so you would recommend the tricolor?
Yes, I like the tricolor or a combination of white and one of the others. Now, quinoa is really expensive, so I try and get it all in, don't waste any. So we're going to blend that up. Oh, we can throw in the salt and vanilla now too, actually. And that just adds that little bit of flavoring that makes the waffles special. You notice, apart from the dates, there's no sweetener going in here. So here we go.
You know, what I love about this recipe is that a lot of waffles have lots of sugar. And that seems to be the standard wherever you find waffles. But with this, you've got the dates, which adds a lot more than what sugar would simply add.
Yes, and there's very few dates. They're just a tiny handful. And you can even make this without dates if you want to put... I like putting hummus or avocado on my waffles, so, you know, I'll often not even put sweetener in. And you can see there that that's a nice brown mixture. It's already got the color added, and it's now smooth. So you can add as much water as you need. The longer this sits while you're cooking, if you make a big batch, you'll need to add more of that additional water. But what you want to see is a vortex down the middle when you've got it. So I'm just going to turn it on and we can see if that vortex is there. So we're now ready to add that to the waffle iron. Ooh, thank you. And what we're going to do is give that a little spray for us, would you, Phil?
Sure.
And now, why don't you sprinkle some seeds on the bottom, just for fun.
Which would you prefer?
Oh, I'll go for popper seeds. This is always fun, because you can mix and match and I forgot. Most waffle irons come with a measurer, so if you use that, it's a good way to see just how much mix, because it can be very difficult to tell just how much you need. So,
otherwise, you'll need a cleaner.
Well, that's true, because it all overspills the sides. And so what I do is I just use the bottom of my cup and then sprinkle some more seeds on for us, if you wouldn't mind.
So I see you have three types of seeds here. You've got sunflower, you've got poppy, you've got flax.
That's right.
I assume you could use pretty much any type of seed, though.
You can. Now, that goes down. If you lift it too early, it pulls the waffle apart. So how do you tell? Well, you wait till the steam stops coming out, which is about 8 to 10 minutes. So that will just sit and cook for the next 8 to 10 minutes.
Excellent. And then after that's cooked...
Then it's time to eat.
Which is my favorite part.
Right. So what would you like? Would you like yogurt? Some jelly, some fresh fruit.
I see fig. I see fig jelly, which you don't see it very often. And I'm a big fan of figs. To me, they're kind of like nature's gummy bears.
Nature's gummy bears. Let's both have some nature's gummy bears on our waffle. And tell me what you think. This is gluten free. You'll notice. So this to me is like the equivalent of bread for someone who's gluten-free.
Oh, that's very good.
And, oh, thank you. And these will freeze beautifully in the freezer and keep for months. So
it's a very easy thing to do for the future, or if you've got some time to prepare for the week.
Yep. So make a big batch. Then you're not fussing with cleaning up more often. Throw them in the freezer, and you've got lovely gluten-free. Pop them in the toaster, and you've got toast or bread for the week.
And you have a very delicious waffle. It is so good.
And this is whole grain. Perfect for managing your blood sugars.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you sharing this with me.
Welcome. Donald had a dry mouth, blurred vision, frequent urination, and dizziness. Tests showed diabetes, and his doctor wanted to put him on metformin and insulin immediately. When he told her he would reverse it by changing his diet, he had no idea she would respond the way she did.
And when I was telling the doctor that, she got angry at me. And she says, look, you need to be on metformin. And I'm going to know why you, it's not going to work. I said, doc, I understand, but if you give me 30 days and a change of diet, let's revisit this. She said, okay, I'm writing your counsel. You refuse insulin. And she looked at me with the sharp eyes and says, I'm going to send you to a dietitian. Maybe she could convince you you need to be on insulin. I said, okay, doc. Earlier that day when I left the doctor, I said, Lord, I'm so sorry for what I did to my diet. Please help me, God. Please help me. And my intent was to go back to eating healthy, raw vegetables and learning about how can I restore my health. And so I told my wife what the doctor said, and I said, I might have to make some major changes in my health. And when I went to the store that day, I went bought cabbage and greens and spinach and kale. I'm not a salad person, but I realized it had to be, you had to be aggressive about this. And that night, my wife made a burrito dish, potatoes, and I thought to myself, well, this is healthy, okay. And I checked my blood that night. To my surprise, my glucose level was 297 before eating. 2 hours after I finished eating, my glucose level was 500. I was a walking time bomb. And I realized then, it was hitting me what the doctor was saying, and I said, oh God, I'm in your hands. It thought crossed my mind, I could lay on this bed tonight, might not even wake up, or have a stroke. But I believe God's word, where he says in Isaiah 41:10, I will help you, fear not. I will strengthen you. I will uphold your right hand, my righteousness. So I believe that if I make an effort and partner with God in his word, that he will make a change in my life. I commenced my breakfast to eat oatmeal, which lowers your cholesterol, and I mix my fruit in there. And then I commenced to eat, drink no more juices because I found I do a lot of sugary. And got rid of junk food and the cookies and sweets. And I tell you, I had to adapt to this. The first week as I was eating raw through my lunch meal, I mean, there were times I said, I don't like this. But I know there's healing in all these vegetables that God created. And there were times that I did not want to exercise, but the Spirit of God would come upon me to continue. You know, I was partnering with God. And there were times it was snowing, and I remember at the track, I would say, Lord, not today, maybe tomorrow. And all of a sudden, somebody would go run on the track, and the Lord said, what's your excuse now? So I just ran and exercised, but to my surprise, in 3 weeks, my sugar level went down to about 150. And I thought, wow. But then the doctor called me up again.
Uh-oh, a call from the angry doctor? Well, I don't have an angry doctor here. I have Dr. Natasha Hertz, ophthalmologist from Washington Adventist Hospital. Complications from diabetes is the leading cause of blindness in working-age Americans. Here's what Dr. Hertz advises diabetics when it comes to eye care.
It is recommended that people with diabetes get their eyes checked every year, even if they're diet-controlled. They should still have it done once a year.
No matter what age they are?
No matter what age they are. But the things that I'm looking for are any sign of abnormal blood vessel growth, whether it's in the front part of the eye or in the retina. You can get bleeding in the retina or swelling in the retina, which is called retinopathy. And especially if the swelling is near the center of your vision or the macula, that's really important to look for that and watch for that, because that's what can cause people to start to lose their vision. But also cataracts grow faster when you have diabetes. So those are things that I'm watching for, and also because of the way that diabetes affects the oxygen delivery to the nerve tissue in the eye, it can also put you more at risk for glaucoma.
Wow, so there are a number of things that having diabetes really can affect the eye.
It's not
for
fair.
A number of different reasons. Yes. So annual eye checks are so important.
Yes.
And that way you can pick these things up early.
That's right.
Yeah. So what is, if we focus more on the retina, which is like the light falling on a screen, right? So we see off of that screen. So tell us, what is the treatment if you're starting to see new blood vessel growth or swelling in the back of that part of the eye?
Yeah, so when I'm doing a dilated eye exam, I am looking very carefully at the macula to make sure there's no sign of swelling. But I'm also scanning around the rest of the retina, too, to make sure there's no signs of little areas of bleeding. Because if I see the beginnings of that, if it's in just one little quadrant, that's considered to be mild retinopathy. But if it's in a couple quadrants, then moderate and to severe or even to the proliferative, it's called, type of retinopathy, where you're having abnormal blood vessels growing because the retina is not getting enough oxygen through the regular blood vessels. But you're looking for all of that because in the beginning stages, it gives you a warning that you've got to get the blood sugar better controlled or the retinopathy will progress. And they have shown that if you can lower the hemoglobin A1C, which is an average of your blood sugar over 3 months. But if you can lower that by 1 point, you can slow down the progression of the retinopathy by 35%.
So wow, that's a huge gain. For often, if you're out of control, 1 point isn't too difficult to achieve, really.
Right, right. And I like to encourage my patients, because I know that it's a daily battle for keeping that blood sugar down. But it does help. It's not just their eyes, but it does help to save their vision. The lower that they can keep that A1C, the better chances they have of not having any retinopathy or other eye problems from diabetes.
So if you have diabetes for a long time, you don't have to get the retinopathy.
That's right. That's right. I have seen a population of patients who unfortunately didn't get regular health care, either regular eye care or regular physical exams with their medical doctors. And a lot of them did have retinopathy because it hadn't been well controlled. And a lot of them lost their vision either from this neovascular glaucoma or from swelling in the retina. But I see another population of people who do get regular visits with their doctors and see their endocrinologists, and they keep their hemoglobin A1C down in the 6 range. I know that everybody wants for it to be even lower, but I mean, seriously, they keep it in a good range. And they've had it for 20 years or more, and they don't have any retinopathy, which is really wonderful. It shows that it works to keep it under good control.
Right. Now, you're talking about vision loss. So people can go completely blind with diabetic retinopathy?
They can, unfortunately. It can be very severe, and people can completely lose their vision in one or both eyes.
Can it happen very suddenly in diabetes? Is there ever an emergency situation where they might be able to actually salvage that by seeking help straight away?
There can be emergency situations. I mean, typically it's more of a gradual thing, that if you're doing your screenings, you can catch it and stop it or slow it down with certain treatments. But because of the way that it affects the blood supply to and from the eye, it can put you more at risk for a stroke to the eye, where you would suddenly lose vision. And it can put you at risk for that type of glaucoma I was talking about, which could happen all of a sudden and the eye pressure go up and they would have a very severe headache and blurred vision. And there's treatment that, if you get it done right away, may save the eye, even in those situations, even though they're advanced.
So a sudden unilateral headache just with
blurred vision, eye would be very red and painful.
And so that is an emergency. They need to see an eye doctor immediately,
right.
And their vision may be saved.
That's right.
Now, tell us about the cataract side of diabetes. What age do people start to get cataracts with diabetes?
The average person will start to get signs of cataracts in their early to mid-50s, but depending on how long you've had diabetes and how good of control it's had, it's possible to get it sooner than that, even in your early 40s. But it makes the type of cataract that you have progress more quickly. So that if the average American needs their cataract out when they're 75, somebody with uncontrolled diabetes might need it out when they're 50.
Mm. And but you would be, they'd still be able to have that done and still have their vision restored.
They would. So cataracts are still very fixable, whether they're due to diabetes or due to something else. The main thing would be with somebody who's diabetic, if their nerve tissue is still healthy and they don't have retinopathy, then it's going to restore their vision. But if, in addition to a bad cataract, they also have nerve damage from the diabetes, then taking the cataract out may not restore their vision.
On the other side of the break, we'll look at how diabetes affects the nerves, plus a workout with Sean. But before that, consider this. Complications come because of actions we take or fail to take. Which reminds me of a story in the Bible. The Israelites were traveling through the wilderness, headed for Canaan. The direct route took them through Edom, but the Edomites refused access. The Israelites became angry and blamed both Moses and God, and rejected them as leaders. Now, snakes and scorpions abound in the desert, and as their leader, God had protected them from these venomous creatures. In rejecting him, they rejected his protection, and as a consequence, it didn't take long before many were dying from the painful bite of fiery serpents. They quickly realized what they'd done and ran to Moses, asking him to intervene. Moses ran to God, who instructed him to quickly build a bronze sculpture of a snake on a pole. And so it was that the antidote for snake bite was to look at the snake hanging on the pole. The dying could look and live. In the Garden of Eden, there was also a serpent. When mankind rejected God as leader, we received a deadly snake bite. Like Israel, we all need to come to the cross and look at Jesus hanging there. You see, the consequence of sin fell on him, and he took the death we deserved in order to give us the life that he deserved. So if you allow him to be your leader, he'll live in you today. Your life will be wonderfully transformed. You'll pass from death to life instantly. Will you invite him in? We're back, and you don't want to miss today's exercise segment. So get your Swiss ball or your exercise ball out, because Sean's here.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
Good to see you. So as you can see, we have our stability ball. And the great way, number one, all stability balls are not created equal. Okay, so that's number one. So for sizing purposes, what you want to see is you want to be able to sit on your ball and you want your legs to be parallel to the ground. If your hips are lower than your knees, then your ball, then the stability ball is too low, okay? Or you need to pump it up a little bit more.
Right.
Okay, so I just wanted to put that out there. So these exercises that we're going to do today are a little bit more on the challenging side, but are focused towards this whole abdominal area, okay? A lot of people ask questions, how do I get rid of this? Yeah. It's about what you eat, but it's about the exercises. And I want you to think about ways to challenge your core, right?
Yep.
So that you can kind of trim it down a little bit.
Right.
So we're gonna warm up. Let's use the stability ball. Your arms are gonna be out front. And all I want you to do is twist to the side. Keep your eyes forward and twist. Keep on going, and I'll explain something. So what you should feel are your obliques engaged, right? Go to the point where you feel the abdominal area kind of stretching a little bit. You want that stretch. Because what we're gonna do today will involve those same exact muscles. And sometimes doing a warm-up that involves those muscles gets it prepared for the movement. Okay? So give me two more reps. One and two. I like that you're rotating your foot. That means you're getting a good range of motion. All right, so number one, what we're gonna do is have a seat. And we're gonna roll. All right, actually. You can do it. I think you can do it totally fine. So what I want you to do is put your hands together, clasp them together, and I want you to keep your abdominal area tight. This is called a bridge, okay?
All right.
So keep that tight. You're working the core. The core is not just the front, but it's the side and the back. I want you to rotate to that side, just allowing your shoulder, there you go, perfect, and back to the center. Get your center of your balance, and then go the other side. You can do maybe about 20 reps. You know, see how you feel. You will feel a challenge in your oblique area, okay? So keep rotating. Make sure you are breathing. Inhaling through your nose, exhaling through your mouth. Give me two more, one on each side. One more. Perfect. And from that position, stay right there. Keep there. Now, the reason why I like to keep someone on the Swiss ball is because if you're in this bridge position and I keep you in this tense position, your core is working the entire time. So what I want you to do is put your hand here. And I want you to just walk your feet back and do almost like a sit-up. All the way up, eyes forward. Yep, now walk it back. Into that bridge position. Yes, and back. All the way up, eyes forward, come back. Now this can be a challenging exercise, so when you're out there, I want you to take your time. All right, 3, 2, one more, and up. There you go, that's not bad. All right, that's a bridge to almost like a sit-up. And then we're gonna finish off with a wood chop. Well, we're not chopping any wood, we're just gonna use the Swiss ball. So right here to the side, go to the side. And stretch. If you can see my feet, they rotate just to allow a good range of motion. And make sure you're breathing, okay? There's no need for you to go really hard on this, which you can do for maybe about 10 to 15 reps on each side. And it's a great way to sculpt and challenge your obliques. And everybody talks about love handles. This is how you give your love handle some love.
Yeah,
so there you go.
They won't be loving you back.
They won't be loving you back. So that's a wood chop, and I think that's a great exercise. You could use a kettlebell, you could use a dumbbell, but a great tool is a Swiss ball. It's very simple, but you can do a whole lot with the abdominal area.
Yeah.
Okay?
That's great.
And most importantly, what I would like you to do to stretch out, just kind of go here. The abdominal area may be tight, but that's fine. And you're all good. That's it.
That's great. Thanks, Sean.
You're
welcome. Didn't get a workout, though.
I did.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I pushed you.
We let them off.
A study of Californian school children found some startling evidence. Children who consumed full-fat dairy products were at a much higher risk of being obese. Alarmingly, the children who consumed the most full-fat dairy products were 99% more likely to be overweight than those who consumed little or none. Choosing low-fat dairy options or non-dairy alternatives like soy or almond milk may go a long way towards resolving childhood obesity. Avoiding full-fat dairy is another ageless advantage.
Now it's time for your questions you've sent to me via Facebook, text, phone, and email. Dorothy asked, is there anything that a person with stage 3 kidney disease can do to prolong the health of their kidneys? Anything that will slow the progression of the disease? Well, there are 5 stages to kidney disease. So stage 3 indicates that you have moderate kidney disease already, which puts you at risk of high blood pressure, anemia, and bone disease. So things are starting to get a little bit more serious. So you will need to work with a dietitian or your doctor or both to be sure that you don't overdo things like phosphorus and potassium. But if they're okay, then I would recommend a whole food, plant-based diet with plenty of vegetables and avoid excess protein. I want to show you a graph that Dr. Tuso shared from the Adventist Health Study that indicates that vegetarians are half as likely to die from kidney disease than non-vegetarians. So seriously consider a vegetarian diet. Someone else messaged, being a pre-diabetic, does that mean I will become diabetic? Not if you make significant changes to your lifestyle. And things that I might recommend are only having 2 or 3 meals a day with no snacks in between. Drink only water or herbal tea. Eat beans or lentils at least once a day. No fried food and limit oil as much as possible. Start all your meals with raw foods. So for breakfast, that might be fruit. For lunch, it might be a salad. Eat a hearty breakfast. Start with those 3 or 4 fruit, no more than 3 or 4 fruit. And then for lunch, have that big salad and follow that with grains, beans, lentils. For your evening meal, you want to have a very small meal. It might just be soup or a fruit salad or a small salad and 1 or 2 whole wheat toast with very little on. After every meal, go for a 5 to 10 minute walk. And what that will do is push those sugars down, because all of us have a little bit of peak after in our sugars after meals. At another time of the day, preferably before a meal, have 20 minutes of vigorous exercise. That's if your doctor is happy for you to do that. Now, that's a lot of change, so don't do it all at once. Introduce those changes in stages over the next 4 to 8 weeks. Someone else called, can peripheral neuropathy happen to someone who doesn't have diabetes, and if so, what can be the cause? Well, there are a vast number of different neuropathies. Some are genetic. Diabetic neuropathy typically involves, as we're discussing on the show today, the hands, the feet in a symmetrical fashion. Other neuropathies involve other areas of the body, but especially the legs. Thanks for those questions. I love hearing from you, so keep sending those questions, and now let's go shopping.
In ancient Greece, barley was a special food of gladiators who were known as barley eaters. In Bible times and in medieval Europe, bread made from barley and rye was peasant food, while wheat products were consumed by the upper classes. However, in Tibet, barley has been a staple food since 500 AD. In most countries today, the high-protein form of barley is widely used for animal feed, while its low-protein form is used to make malt, mainly for the brewing industry. It can be roasted and turned into roasted barley tea, and that's popular in Asia. Of course, wheat has superseded it for bread making, but barley should still find its place on our plates, with its rich, nutty flavour and nice, chewy texture. You know, I enjoy steaming barley flakes with dried fruit for 20 or 30 minutes and eating it hot for breakfast, or adding it to soups and stews. With lots of molybdenum, manganese, selenium, it's very nutritious, and its fibre has multiple beneficial effects on cholesterol, while also feeding friendly bacteria in the digestive tract and preventing blood sugar levels from rising too high. So bon appetit. One complication of diabetes is nerve damage called neuropathy. After 10 years of diabetes, there's a 30 to 40% chance of neuropathy, and the risk continues to rise over time. So we invited Dr. Kamran Saraf and Dr. Doris Cope from Cure Pain, specialists in pain management, to join us for this part of the show. I asked Dr. Cope to explain diabetic neuropathy.
Diabetic neuropathy is pain or is pathology in the small little vessels that go to the hands and feet. It's usually found in called glove and stocking distribution. It's burning pain that is often worse at night, very, very troubling. And it's because in diabetes, the vessels are constricted in the periphery and they're not getting good blood flow and the nerves are irritated, and it's a chronic painful condition that is difficult to treat.
So it's impaired blood flow damaging the nerves.
Correct.
In those.
And it's usually in the periphery because that's where the small vessels are, in the hands and feet. So they call it glove and stocking pain. It's usually symmetrical on both sides of the body. Might be only the feet, burning in the feet, the soles of the feet, and then it might move to the hands.
So Dr. Saraf, what would, if some of our diabetic viewers are watching, how could they tell if they were starting to get the changes of diabetic neuropathy? What might they feel?
Usually it starts with actually lack of feeling. So patients start to feel less sensation in the hands and the sensitive areas of the fingers, in the feet. And as Dr. Cope said, there's a burning sensation sometimes. But if patients say that, for example, they're touching something and they can't really explain what it feels like, that's how it starts to feel.
Right, like they're walking on cotton wool or something.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Dr. Cope, you mentioned the burning that then develops. How long does that take from the cotton wool to the burning?
Again, it can take years. It can be shorter. It depends on how out of control their blood sugar is.
So this is all about control of diabetes,
Control
of those sugars. So it can happen quite quickly where they go to a burning sensation?
Usually it might take months or so or years, but it usually people who have diabetes have other health issues. They may have weight issues, hypertension. If they smoke, it's much worse, much quicker, because that also causes vasoconstriction.
So each cigarette that they smoke, the blood vessels tighten down for some hours
afterwards,
exactly. Don't they?
And most patients don't know initially when their blood sugars are out of control or when they're diabetic. So it can go on for a long time before they actually realize it.
Hmm. Now, how do you help with the pain, with that burning sensation and the pain that comes with neuropathy?
Well, blood glucose control. We ask the patients to check their sugars often during the day, make sure they're taking the appropriate medication to get their sugars under control. And there's nerve pain medication that we can give to decrease that sensation, that impulse, the burning and the numbness.
Do you have many options for that, for the nerve pain?
There are several different medications, but other than that, not really too many other options other than lifestyle control and better glucose control.
Dr. Cope, tell us about those medications.
Some of them that we use were originally developed for seizures, and they keep nerves from firing too much. At a higher dose, they were treating seizures, and they found fortuitously it helped peripheral neuropathy, specifically diabetic neuropathy. Other medications are like low-dose antidepressants that affect the way the brain receives these signals, so that can be helpful as well. Topical creams can also be helpful, which don't have systemic effects. Usually opiates or narcotics are not really advised. They don't really work that well, and the kind of dose you'd need to blunt that pain would be high enough that it would cause other problems, so we try to avoid that if possible. Sometimes there's physical therapy, you know, warm baths, heating, cooling modalities that might be helpful. But generally speaking, the best treatment is not to get there.
So there's also the option of a spinal cord stimulator, which is an implant that we put behind the spine, and it modulates the nerve sensations reaching the brain, and that's been proven to decrease the sensation of neuropathy.
So as the nerve sensations are coming up from the feet or the hands,
and
you
it's
can
going
alter
up the
message that goes to the brain.
Exactly.
And that's an implant that is under the skin?
Exactly. It's just like a pacemaker for the heart. We put a pacemaker for the spine.
And it just stays there forever?
It stays there forever, yes. The battery lasts about 7 to 10 years. And once it's time for a battery change, you just go in and pop the old one out and put a new one in.
Wow. And they're running again?
Yes.
Now, does the pain ever burn out? Like, does it ever go away and patients are able to come off their medications?
I've not seen that. I've not seen that happen. It generally just tends to slowly, gradually be a chronic condition.
Now, there are some issues with numbness in the feet, aren't there, Dr. Seraph?
There are certainly a lot of issues with numbness in the feet. We see a lot of patients who have diabetic neuropathy step on sharp objects such as a tack, and they don't notice that they've stepped on something until it gets infected, and that can lead to a lot of other complications.
Tell us about what those might be.
Well, an infection in the foot can lead to bigger infection, gangrene, and eventually possible amputation of that foot due to just necrosis of the extremity.
Because you give antibiotics, the circulation's so poor it doesn't carry
exactly
it to the spot, and so there's no way to treat it
exactly
except to amputate. And of course, the other thing is those infections go deep to the bone, don't they?
Yes, they do.
And then it's very difficult to treat.
Yes.
Now, is it possible to prevent or reverse neuropathy, Dr. Cope?
I think it's possible to prevent it to a certain degree, and there's different kinds of neuropathy. There's a lot of syndromes that are different neuropathies that can be actually effectively treated by certain sympathetic nerve blocks. But diabetic neuropathy, there's not one nerve to target. It's a whole area. And again, you can have neuropathy and have numbness and weakness. You can also have neuropathic pain, which is the burning. So they're two different things. You might be numb and weak and have risk of falls or risk of infection, but you don't really have the pain. You may have the pain and still have healthy, relatively healthy extremities. So they're a little bit different, the neuropathy and the neuropathic pain. So you could have both or hopefully neither.
After the break, we have another guest, so stand by. And we're back. Donald had sugars of 300 before meals, 500 after meals, so he bought a lot of veggies and he ate them. And he got active. Within a few days, his sugars were down to 150. His doctor was mad at him for not going on the insulin, but they had a deal. She gave him 28 days to reverse it. When he still had 7 days to go, she rang to say she wanted him to see the specialist, see what happens next.
So I met with the endocrinologist, and she saw my lab reports, and the first thing she emailed me was, wow! And when I went to meet with her, she pulled all the lab reports, and she says, okay, remove your shoes. I want to check your feet, because once diabetes begins, it begins normally in the lower extremities. And while she was just probing me, and said, let me know if you feel anything. And every time she touched me, I says, I feel it. And she says, okay. She said, whatever you're doing, keep it up. You don't need to be on insulin. You don't need to be checking your blood 3 times a day anymore. I mean, just keep it up. You're doing good. I say, praise the Lord. And so I continue my regimen, exercise, vegetables and fresh air. And I ran across a passage in Jeremiah 30:17 says, "For I will restore health unto thee, and I will heal thee of thy wounds, saith the Lord, because they called thee an outcast." I was so touched what God was doing in my life and my body. And I started sharing with the church and sharing with other people. I should say that after 2 weeks of a vegetarian diet, eating raw, my dry mouth went away. My frequent urination went away. My dizziness went away. Then my eyes started correcting itself. God is so good. And I just give him the glory, the honor, and praise for what he has done in my life. And it was less than 6 months. And so now, you know, I still continue to exercise. I continue to drink a lot of water. All I drink is water. And I was sharing with one of my friends that the only time I had juice is during communion at church. But I'm a firm believer that if one make a commitment to God and ask God to help them, the Lord will lead them in the path of righteousness, and they can overcome diabetes.
I love that testimony. What a story. And you can do the same. In fact, our next guest has helped dozens of people do just that. Wes Youngberg is a nutritionist with his own practice in Temecula, California, and he was at the American College of Lifestyle Medicine meeting in San Diego where we spoke with him. Here he shares one complication of diabetes that really bothers him.
Well, it's the big C word, right? Nobody likes to have diabetes, but nobody wants to get cancer. And what's really interesting, the least well-known complication of diabetes is actually cancer. It was a big study that was published in 2013 by the journal Diabetes Care, arguably the number one journal for diabetes management in the world. And they did a study that included over 29,000 individuals. And they found that in a very short amount of time, those individuals that were on insulin were at a much higher risk of developing cancer. 30% increased risk just because they were on insulin. That created an outcry in the diabetes management community. What's going on here? But we've actually known that excess insulin, this is the key, excess insulin has been strongly associated with many common cancers for over 40 years in the medical literature. So using just the right amount of insulin for what your body isn't producing is fine. But if you're using extra insulin as an excuse not to go walking after meals, not to pay attention to your diet, not to focus on lifestyle approaches that improve insulin sensitivity, that extra insulin is actually increasing risk for heart disease, hypertension, kidney problems, but especially cancer. Now we understand.
Now, someone with pre-diabetes, they're not getting medications, they don't have diabetes yet, but their insulin levels are already up there, trying to drive the slightly high sugar down and not achieving it because they've got their insulin resistance. Are they also at risk?
I believe so. In fact, there's many studies showing that there's a much higher risk of prostate cancer in men who have metabolic syndrome, which is essentially insulin resistant syndrome, where their bodies may be controlling blood sugars acceptably, but the trade-off is that the pancreas has to produce a tremendous amount of insulin in order to compensate for controlling blood sugars. That extra insulin, even though it's not injected, it's being produced by the body's own pancreas, is still increasing risk for cancer. After all, extra insulin is a hormone that is a powerful growth factor, and it stimulates the initiation and the growth of cancer.
You're right. As an OBGYN, caring for women with diabetes in pregnancy, they shunt a lot more glucose to their fetus puts out a lot more insulin in response, and those babies grow because insulin acts like a growth hormone to those babies. Now,
we're talking about cancer. Is it cancer, a particular kind of cancer, or is this cancer in general?
Well, it's interesting that the study published by Diabetes Care Journal showed that it actually increases most of the common cancers. Colon cancer in men is increased by threefold in those who've had diabetes for 15 or more years. Reproductive cancers, breast cancer, increased by more than twofold in women who've had diabetes more than 15 years. Skin cancer, interestingly enough, up 60% in men and 120% in women. Even melanoma and urinary tract cancers go up when they're exposed to diabetes for many years. And so that's all the more reason to start studying what are the ways that we can potentially reverse this through comprehensive lifestyle strategies that can be very fundamental, very basic, but powerful in not just controlling blood sugars, as important as that is, but actually dramatically lowering your risk of common cancers as well.
If you have diabetes, be sure to stay in control. If you do regular sugar testing, then you can stay on top of your sugars. Remember, better control means you're less likely to have all these complications. And be sure to have eye screening at least once a year, regardless of your age. Let your doctor monitor your kidney function by doing regular blood tests. And take extra good care of your feet. Always wear well-fitting shoes. Visually inspect your feet top and bottom with a mirror if necessary, frequently, especially if you have numbness, which, by the way, can be reversed if you do what Donald did. And if you were inspired by Donald's story, then partner with your doctor and do what Donald did, because if you reverse your diabetes, then you don't have to worry about the complications. That's all for me today. Thanks for joining us and Go Healthy for Good. I'll see you next time.